Rugby league player playing in the cold this season? Does your hair get in your eyes during the game? What you need is a headband. Yes, a Blakeband headband. The Blakeband headband is a new way to control flyaway hair while keeping your noggin warm during the game. Made from 100% koala fur, the Blakeband headband is like having a hot chicken schnitzel strapped to your head. Buy the Blakeband headband now and get your Big Ben Murdoch Bacilla Bubble or Chris Hill hairpiece absolutely free.
As worn by Blake Austin.
Yeah, that's correct.
For the best headband brand, it's the Blakeband headband. Buy it now!
Subject terms and conditions. No koalas were harmed in the making of this product. Not guaranteed to cure seasonal attention disorder, summer month deficiency, or any Australian sunlight deprivation. Only available in Primrose and Blue by way of order from Woodward Brown Bethesda.
Coming up on the podcast, why I put in a bell-end performance at Bellevue, and there's a torrent of abuse against Toronto. Fiona Bruce investigates Jason Clark, but will she come up with his true valuation? Sam's statistics are duplicated, and are all Super League grounds aesthetically pleasing? It's left for Daniel to critique. There's our predictions, along with Dennis's psychology and a transatlantic letter. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Hello, I'm Rob London from here in what has been a very wet Sydney. But it doesn't seem to matter whether you've been in Oz or the UK over the past few weeks. It's been raining in spades. So I should probably introduce you to my two podcasting weather patterns. First up, a low pressure podcaster that brings with him inclement statistics and a cyclone of curry atmospheric appreciation. And he has a Ratchford engraved barometer on his wall. It's Sam Michael Fish Sankey.
Hello, good morning. Michael Fish, the man who famously didn't predict the hurricane. I was more a John Ketley fan myself. John Ketley is a weatherman. Tribe of Toffs, 1988.
It was the one that used to be at, when I lived in England. Oh, one at Albert Dock. What was his name?
Oh, don't go there.
Why? Fred Talbot. Fred Why? Talbot.
Is he still on TV? What's?
No. Yew Tree.
Oh, dear. Okay, and secondly on the radar, a podcasting isobar that usually gives the podcast four seasons in one day, holding his ever-decreasing shriveled-up weather balloons. Yes, our very own What Bevan meteorologist, it's Dennis Wincy Willis Waywell.
Whoa, did well to get that out there. Hey, Dennis, Storm Dennis.
Sam's won. We had a competition, Dennis. How long it would take you before you said Storm Dennis? I went for 5.5 seconds. Sam went for 3.2. I now owe him £5. You're so predictable, aren't you?
You knew it was coming. I'm a storm flooding the rugby league media. I am showering information, you know, passing wind where others don't, you know, pissing on your rugby league politics and so on.
Oh, you weren't at the game last night, though, down there in the south of England again.
Yeah, I couldn't make it against the thing. I thought I wouldn't be able to get a ticket with Toronto bringing so many fans.
Mm. Was the Toronto end packed out, Sam? It was actually.
It was very full. It was about 11,500 there. But I think that was to do with the Warrington promotion of Dad and a Lad Go for a Tenner type of thing.
Mm. One of those things. Okay. All right. Well, we need to go back a little bit first, don't we? First of all, to the Wakefield game. The team was Ratchford, Lynham, King, Mamo, Charlie Austin, Widdop, Philbin, Clark, Cooper Curry, Ben Murdoch Masilla, and Jason Clark. The interchange bench was Akawala, Davis, Walker, and Burrell. Sam, you were there, weren't you? You actually went.
Yes, it was bloody windy. A slightly hairy drive on the way home, but the conditions were awful. We will say that. But we played really well and with intelligence in the first half. And I don't know what happened in the second. It was almost as if they relaxed and basically made a cock-up of it.
OK, well, let's go through it then. So the final score was Wakefield 18, Warrington 8. The first note I've got down here is the 38th minute. Stephen Ratchford slots over a penalty to make it Wakefield 0, Wyre 2. What happened for 37 minutes, Sam?
We had the lion's share of possession. We got to their 20 metres quite regularly. We actually turned down the chance to kick for goal on two other occasions, which perhaps came back to haunt us eventually. But just couldn't get over. To be fair, Wakefield defended quite well. And as I've said, it was tough weather to play rugby.
Well, we were getting repeat sets. Widdop was kicking that ball in and we were just turning them over time and time again.
Correct.
Okay, yes. All right. 44th minute after the restart, it's a penalty to Wakefield and it's 2-2. And then in the 49th minute, it's another penalty to Trinity to make it Wakefield 4, Wyre 2. I'm not sure which one of those penalties it was, Sam, but it did seem a little bit, looking at it, I think it was Austin that was supposed to be lying on. He was only on for a fraction of a second, and the referee had his whistle in his mouth. How was the ref?
Didn't see that he was the problem. The problem almost seemed to be we weren't learning, and they just started to get a bit of a foothold. A couple of penalties in a row, and they got momentum. And we were starting to mess around, trying to slow the game down without actually being dominant in the tackle.
Okay, well, 52nd minute, we did have a chance. Jake Mamo broke away. He looks to find Widdop on the inside, but Widdop can't quite gather the ball for his debut try. How far away was he from getting that try, Sam?
The pass was behind him. Pass was behind him. He was having to reach back for it.
But Mamo did make a break.
Sorry, he did,
Mamo did make a break. Okay.
Yeah.
Dennis? I mean, you were listening on whatever it was. I don't know what radio station you were tuning in on. Were you getting a bit of the feeling by this stage that we weren't going to win the game?
No, I think I was listening on Radio Leeds. They sounded a bit different to what they normally do. I was thinking to myself, actually, after the first half, we might have tired them out. And, we were going to win it in the last sort of 15 minutes. But obviously it wasn't to be. It just seemed like a bit of a lacklustre sort of performance, really. I don't think anybody got going from what I could hear. There was nothing special about it.
Well, we got going in the 61st minute because a nice move between Widdop and Curry. Curry manages to sort of wriggle free in the tackle and gets the ball to Stephen Ratchford on his shoulder. He also converts his own try. And suddenly we're back in front, Sam. It's Wakefield 6, Wyre 8. It was looking like we might just go on and win it at that stage.
It was, and it was a very, very nicely worked try. And no more than 5 minutes later, we produced exactly the same position. Quick play of the ball, Widdop to Curry. Curry this time gets his hands properly free and stands in the tackle for almost two full seconds with the ball ready to pass it to someone in support. And there's no centre. And there's no centre and there's no wingman there.
So who is the centre? Who is the centre on that side?
That week, I suppose every week so far this time, it's been Toby King.
Right.
But it was only 10 metres out and it would have been a carbon copy try and we would have gone clear.
King isn't one really for go. You know, he doesn't sense those breaks, does he, King? You know, he's there for that kick up in the air, but he's very rarely on the shoulder of Curry. You don't see him sort of running through like Ratchford or we've seen with Ashton the other night. Mamo on the other side. I mean, he made the break, Sam. He had an okay game, did he?
Up and down. He was classic Mamo. He made that break. He brought a bit of pace and a bit of enthusiasm, but he also made a couple of mistakes, particularly later on in the game when he was trying to force the issue.
I feel a bit sorry for Mamo because he's been thrown into that team on the worst conditions, struggling to get his place. And then, you know, it's a difficult way to sort of like prove that, you know, you belong in the team, innit?
I always think he gets a little bit of hard criticism on Twitter and Facebook. You sort of people don't tend to seem to like Mamo. I'm not. I actually think he's done okay when he's come into the team at times.
Mamo might love him.
Mamo might. Yeah, I guess so. 72nd minute, and it all goes wrong for Wyre with Matty Ashurst crosses for Trinity. Hampshire converts, and it's Wakefield 12, Wyre 8. And then in the 74th minute, with Wyre chasing the game, a loose pass is intercepted by Tom Johnson, who just runs away tries converted. And the final score is Wakefield 18, Wire 8. Just that last try, Sam. I actually thought Charnley overran that play. There was no way that that ball from Mamo was going to get out to Charnley where Charnley was standing.
No, but it was within the last couple of minutes, really. We were chasing it, as you've said in your summary, and we were just forcing it. We were getting all a bit panicky. For me, though, it was before then. I talked about Curry being stood with the ball ready. From the subsequent play of the ball, King went from dummy half. We got a penalty, and we could have calmed everything down in front of the post by taking 2 points. But no, we go for glory plays leading to their position where they came back into the game. I just felt we mismanaged that last 15 minutes really badly. We got ourselves ahead, and we mismanaged the game and threw it away.
Off topic slightly, but I would have thought, you know, when I saw Tom Johnson score that sort of like breakaway, I thought, wouldn't it be good to get Ashton and Johnson on the wings for like England and Great Britain? It'd be pretty awesome, that, wouldn't it, from a speed point of view?
You still want to stick him on the wing, don't you? You're obsessed with Ashton going on the wing.
I know. He's injured himself.
Well, we'll come on to that. Just going on about pace, are we feeling that Josh Charnley's lost a bit of pace? Been a couple of occasions this year now where he's not been able to chase back and catch the player. I think at Wigan he struggled to get back. I know the Johnson one was a little bit different because he had to turn and run back, but didn't seem to be any signs there that he can chase a man down anymore, Sam.
No, I think I'm glad you caught yourself there, because I don't think it's fair to judge him against Tom Johnson, possibly the quickest winger, and with a 5 metre start. But
is Johnson that quick? I didn't realise Johnson was that quick. Is he quick, is he?
Yeah. Oh, well, I'd have loved him down here a couple of years ago when there was rumours. But...
Oh, you mean the club? Loved him in the pub, rumours. Yeah. See where you're going.
Oh, dear. Okay. Did anyone see Luther Burrell on Instagram commenting about the pitch? Did anyone see that?
I'll
read it to you. I've got it here. I'll find it somewhere. Just a sec. Here it is. Luther Burrell. What a mess. How is anyone expected to perform on such a surface? I know I've been used to rugby union and a southern venue, but in this day and age, it's unacceptable. What kind of condition would you call that? The surface could be improved tremendously with a simple brush up after each cut and blow, and one expects a better range of conditioners. Sorry, that's TripAdvisor, Wimslow Hairdresser. Sorry, I've read the wrong one out there. Attendance was 5,197. Sam, do you want to have a guess? What percentage of Wakefield population attended the game? Anytime today.
Yeah.
Maybe this week, in the next hour.
I'm going to say 2.5%.
Ooh, well, you're a little bit out there. It was 5.19%. Now, Warrington against St. Helens got 12,562. Have a little stab, Dennis, at what you think the percentage of the population of Warrington went to watch that game.
About 0.4%.
Sam's got his hand up. Clearly, he wants to go for a piss.
No, Warrington's population is about 240,000, so you should be able to work it out there, Dennis.
Well, I've got the population down. This is the census, last year's census, and I don't know quite where they cut the border off. I think maybe south of the Rimmer, Sam, they don't include everyone. Wakefield's population, they've got exactly at 100,000. Warrington's, they've got at 202,200. So it was 6.21%. So slightly higher following in Warrington than Wakefield. But here's a goodie. The biggest attendance for Toronto was last year, 9,974. What percentage of Toronto do you think watches Toronto?
Have I already answered that?
0.34%. There's 2.93 million people. So it's really gaining momentum over there in Toronto with that kind of stat.
If you were to do that same stat with Castleford, you'll probably find it's about 15 to 20% of the population of Castleford.
Yeah. What else are you going to do in Castleford apart from try and fiddle with your ASBO? Steve Price came out with a few classic comments after the game. I'll just go through a few of them. Expects better, tricky conditions. Our tactical discipline let us down. I thought we weren't at the races. Trinity handled conditions much better than we did. It's a slow game. We cannot generate ruck speed. We should have executed better. A clunky game that there was no flow and tempo. The list goes on and on and on. Did any of those sort of catch your eye, Dennis?
Yeah, I wanted to know. Tricky conditions, what does that mean? Does that mean that we can only play in particular conditions? I thought we were at the races. Which races? Was it Chester or somewhere
heavy,
else?
Heavy going, you'd think.
Heavy you? Going. Ah, right, okay. We were missing a lot of things we stand for. Don't know what's that. What do we stand for? Needs to be quite clear with the message there. But a clunky game. There was no flow and tempo. I just wondered whether there were two new Spanish players we were interested in. Or... whether that was just referring to the fact that Chris Hill was missing and that's the flow and tempo that Chris and Cooper have, you know, so who knows?
Do we get a little bit worried that Steve Price doesn't realise that in February the weather isn't going to be that good in Yorkshire? The way he said it, it came as a surprise to him.
Well, that's why Blake Costin's got a headband, isn't it? I mean, they just can't handle it. I think it's almost like, you know, for the first 2 months of the season, we're just sort of like, oh, what's all this about? And seem to forget about it. Must be like blocking it out. Must be a psychology thing. I'll cover that later.
Mm. Sam, any of those sort of caught your eye, some of those comments he came out with?
I think Dennis has summed it up very nicely there. But as I've already hinted at, I felt it was that last 15 minutes, our tactical discipline let us down. We made some big errors in that last 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Were we missing a forward, Sam? And I think we'll come on to the Toronto game, and maybe it was even more prominent in that game. But were we missing a forward at Wakefield? Would that extra forward have made the difference in that last 20 minutes?
It might have done if we'd decided, once we got ahead, just to stick it up our jumper and drive five drives and a kick.
Yeah.
We continued to try and play glory rugby in atrocious weather.
Okay, let's move on to the Toronto game that happened last night. The Wire team was, Ashton was back, Lynham King, Ratchford went into the centre with Charnley outside him, Austin Widdop, Philbin Clark, Cooper, Curry Bemard at Masilla and Jason Clark. Interchange bench, Lewis Johnson came into the team, Davis, Walker and Burrell. Final score, Warrington 32, Toronto 22. Where do we start with this one, Sam? I mean, it was non-stop, wasn't it? Seventh minute, Charnley over in the corner, Ratchford misses the kick and we're 4-0 up. And then in the eighth minute, Gareth Widdop scores after a quarterback pass from Tom Lynham and he converts to make it 10-0. We looked to be on our way, didn't we? We looked like it was just going to be plain sailing all night.
This match was value for money for me. I mean, right from the start, it had everything in it, didn't it? We had a pretty good view of it on Madden Boy TV, but Sam, yes, maybe you could give us your shitty view from where you were sat.
Well, can I just point in at this point, we did put all the highlights on online last night. I do have to apologise. We didn't manage to get the Widdop tryout. Unfortunately, I was having a shit and I missed that. So.
Maybe put a technical statement out.
Yeah, true. How forward was that pass? How forward was that pass to Widdop?
I think he could have probably sat in the West Stand and taken that pass, couldn't he? Was that forward?
Got a point on that.
Yes.
I've got on the radio, they were mentioning about Toronto and how when playing away, the referee is almost not under pressure to give penalties and decisions because there's no crowd there making a noise. And I thought, that's quite interesting. I wonder what statistically the penalties look like for someone like Toronto as the season goes on. There you go, Sam.
Well, they always used to say that about the Kop, didn't they? Yeah, Liverpool used to get more penalties than anyone else in front of the Kop. Mm-hmm.
And I know over the last couple of years, Bernard Gash or Gauche, the Catalan guy, has complained about it. Well, he's complained about getting unfavorable.
Who is he? Who is he? A chef? What are you on about? What's
yeah,
on?
He could be a chef. There's a next. Soundbite for you.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, in the 23rd minute, we score even more points. It's Wire 16, Toronto 0. Lydham speeds down the wing. Some poor attempts of a few tackles by Toronto. And it's 16-0 to the wire. And then on the 33rd minute, Wilkin pulls a try back. Wire 16, Toronto 6. We're still not done. 36th minute, what a moment. Matty Ashton, he ghosts across the field, explodes through a gap, and the fullback just has no chance of catching Ashton, races around the outside of him and scores for his first try. What a wonderful try, Dennis, eh?
It was. I think, you know, we've been waiting for that, haven't we, all season. I said it, I think, in week one, that, you know, the crowd are just waiting for him to have his moment. And thank God it came on home soil. I think it was brilliant.
Do we think that, I mean, on a couple of occasions now, we've seen breaks, Sam, and Widdop is always there on the inside. He's a little bit like Sean Edwards used to be. I don't remember Patton ever being on that shoulder, you know, waiting to get the ball back inside. I mean, it made it so much easier for Ashton, didn't it? Because the fullback, he couldn't pick where he needed to go.
He did. And I think Gareth Widdop would be maybe not totally happy at you saying he looks like Sean Edwards. Maybe in the ability of his play, but maybe not facially. I think Gareth would prefer his hair.
It's true. Okay. You think that's it. 22-6 to Wire. We're going in at the break, comfortably in the lead. But then the most comical of tries, in the 39th minute, somehow Andy Akers is in and Wallace converts, and it's Wire 22, Toronto 12. Does anyone want to sum up what happened there? Has anyone got a clue what happened?
Is this the one where it was passed by King off the floor?
Well, King fucked up completely, but the pass back, I mean, there's a player standing in the way there. I don't know if he has to get out of the way. It was a bit similar to that one at Catalan last year where we gave a penalty away. I think Patton didn't get off the floor. Seems to be a really grey area, this play of the ball.
Yeah, and also I couldn't work out whether the Toronto defender hit Widdop's arm or actually hit the ball. If we'd have been on TV, it'd certainly been looked at 97 times by the video referee.
We were on Boyd TV.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yes, sorry.
I tell you what I did notice, John Wilkin, I think if my tactic would have been to rush John Wilkin, because his passes seemed to be in slow motion, really lethargically throwing it back. And I thought if we could have moved up on him quite quick, could have like actually pretty much closed them down early doors.
It's true. Okay. All right. Well, we go into the break at 22-16, but then in the 49th minute, Matty Russell nearly does a Matty Russell and falls over his own shoelaces, but he does manage to score. The conversion's missed, but nevertheless, Toronto are within 6 points of Wire. It's Wire 22, Toronto 16. Were we starting to get a bit worried then, Sam? Was that where we started to think, oh, here we go, another night at Halliwell Jones where we can't get away?
Yeah, because I think it's important to point out as well, Matty Russell did a classic Matty Russell in the first half where, with the line gaping for him to score, instead of putting the ball down in the corner, he sidesteps into the defence and gets the ball dislodged. And there was the other occasion when Toronto dropped the ball over the line. So there was already signs there that they were getting into positions and could score against us.
Mm. I thought his tan looked nice.
But what did you think about it watching the game? Did you not think that Toronto...
This is my problem, team, isn't it? You see, I'm at the editing hub here. All I'm doing is recording, getting things out for the fans. I had two showers, two shits. I hardly watched any of the game, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, it was just full on. So it's very hard for me to go back through it and think what really happened, because I'm just basically like the Davros of the podcast. Davros. Not easy for me. Not easy.
To be fair, you look more like Davros than you do Steven Spielberg. So,
well, after that, anyway, because you obviously weren't watching, Austin, his performance, I think there was one particular point where he, I don't know what he did, but he basically messed up. But his actual kicking game was pretty shocking. And that headband, it is always falling over his eyes and he's missing things. And he doesn't, you know what I mean? I think he needs a proper headband, because he's certainly not playing as a marquee player at the moment, I don't think.
He's got, ever since he's worn that headband, he's not been marquee in my eyes.
Yeah. That's true.
Something's happened there. And of course, on the 57th minute, an ex-Warrington player again scores with O'Brien after a lame attempt by Austin leads to an offload, and Wallace slots over the extra two, and it's Wire 22, Toronto 22. We've had a few tweets on this, Sam, that if you watch that highlights back, Burrell's just ball watching. He doesn't move up. He's on the right-hand side of Austin, yeah, and he just watches. And then when they make the break, he's got no pace at all. I mean, Cooper makes more of a valiant effort than Burrell does.
And without being
Slate him. It's nearly Easter.
The whole team for a period of 10 minutes, I think I texted you and said, we're chasing shadows. And it was like that. They were offloading for fun. We weren't completing any tackles hardly, and they were just.
It's the slowest transition I've ever seen this before, isn't it? You know what I mean? I mean, you know, some people have been commentating that, you know, his defence is great, this, that, and the other. Now, what we've got to do? Wait another 20 games for his offence to come up to speed, because, you know, when he's taking the ball up, Jesus, he don't want to get his kit creased, does he?
Kit looked lovely again, absolutely immaculate last night. It's beautiful to see. But he didn't chase back there. So we're 22 all, and then on the 64th minute, we get a penalty. Ratchford slots it over to make it 24-22. And then in the 70th minute, now, would you have taken the kick at goal here, Sam? We make it 26-22. Seemed a bit of an odd one, didn't it? You know, the ball's going to go back downfield after the conversion, and we're only four ahead.
Yeah, it was an interesting one, and it was almost as if they'd thought, well, last week against Wakefield, we didn't take the kick, and it came back to bite us. This week, we're going to. The only difference was this week we're playing at home, looking to finish them off, whereas last week if we'd have took the kick, it'd have been a bit more of a defensive position in those conditions. So it worked out. In the end, it worked out, didn't it? Let's be fair.
Would you have taken the kick, though, Sam? Would you have gone for that kick, or would you have run the ball there?
I'd have taken the kick.
Okay.
Yeah. I wrote down at one point, it's one of the only points I wrote down, but there was a turning point.
With your crayon.
I wrote down, I drew a little picture, but Widdup, at a certain point, right, you know, there was nothing on. He had the ball in hand. So he was actually doing quite a few kicks through as well, if you notice. But there was a certain point, nothing on. You could see that the defence was tired, and he just put a little kick through, nothing in it. And it was just a tired pickup from Toronto, and he knocked on. And I think from that point on, we basically finished the game off quite well.
Okay. All right. Well, 78th minute. Well, no, hang on. 75th minute. Toronto have a try disallowed. I haven't watched it back, unfortunately, because that was when I was having my second.
Jesus Christ.
But from what I'm told, a lot of people saying it was a try. Irritable bowel system. It's not easy.
System.
Dennis. System. Yes, system. Irritable bowel system. It's the move up some syndrome.
I thought that was another new player. No, it wasn't a try. There is an excellent picture on the Warrington Guardian website of the ball out of his hand.
Is it static?
It was a great. We go back to what we were talking about, Charnley earlier. He was quick enough there to get back to the attacker and actually knock the ball out. Affect the tackle that knocked the ball out of his hand. By Charlie.
Maybe a little bit of a poster of Josh Charlie on your wall there, Sam. Am I saying the blue tack's going up and maybe we're going to...
No. It's going to take a lot this year to remove Stefan and Ben.
Fair enough. 78th minute. Boom! Ben Murdoch-Masila smashes over. It's a crisscross move again. Ratchford lands his sixth goal out of seven attempts. And its final score, Warrington 33. Toronto 22. We can all sigh of relief there. Dennis, you thought it was an entertaining match. Were we missing a forward? We obviously missed a forward at Wakefield, but last night we just couldn't get on top of them, could we?
No. Looking at the bench, there was no meat on the bench, was there? You know, if you were going for a mixed grill, there wasn't really sort of like a good hunk of meat there to sort of like, you know,
salad
get
bench.
You through.
Salad yeah. bar.
I believe, hot off the press, that Latu is suffering from a head knock, and that's why he wasn't available. So that's the word on the street there. But not enough meat for me. Are you? What do you think?
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I did think Lewis Johnson looked like he'd beefed up a bit. I thought. I would say he was more a falafel.
Mm. Yeah.
There was substance there, but when you bite into it, you're still missing a bit of protein, aren't you? I think it's the way.
Are we going to talk about a curry tonight?
Yes. Let's do curry now. Now, Sam, two dishes tonight. We want you to combine the two dishes and come up with the one dish. Ben Curry, what curry is curry this week?
Yeah, Ben dropped off a bit this week. He made a nice play to send Lynham down for his try, where he drew the defence, gave it to King, and gave King the space to put Lynham away. But he was down on work rate this week, as opposed to last week, where he produced 49 tackles and just two misses.
Bullshit.
Andy got a Man of Steel point last week.
Right.
So I think you should know that at the minute he's leading the league defensively for the second rowers by some way.
What's this got to do with what curry is?
Yeah.
I mean, waiters come over to the table and you've started bottling on for still, 5 minutes about stats.
We're still lacking that spark in attack. So for me, he's just bubbling along at a Rogan Josh. Just bubbling along at a Rogan Josh.
Oh, okay.
And today's curry dish is Rogan Josh.
It's a curry mat maro.
Okay. That's needs improvement, according to the Curryometer chart.
Excellent. Scott. Excellent. Let's have a listen to Steve Price post-match.
Do you think that's done enough to convince a few fans that are perhaps critical of the style of play somewhat?
Oh, it's only early days and people could understand it. Gareth and Blake have only had, you know, a handful of training sessions together. So, you know, the more times we get that combination going, and you know, we got, you know, two captains will be coming back very shortly. So, you know, that's going to bolster our squad. And you know, sometimes you've got to give credit to the opposition too. They're leading the competition in offloads. They play a high risk style of rugby, you could say. And when it comes off, it can be you know, quite electric. And you know, we had to earn it tonight.
So another one that Steve's obviously going to come out with for quite a while is this Blake Austin Widdop combinations only going to get better and better. When do we think it's going to peak? Have we got any sort of clue as to when it will peak, Dennis? When are you thinking?
Right. Now, what you've got to remember here, and I've said this for a while on the podcast, is Mr. Price, we've criticised him possibly for not rotating players and for playing a boring brand of rugby. Now, what he's actually advocating this year is that he's prepared to do the rotation, drop Ashton, etc., and so on, and also play some high-risk rugby, which he also referred to in the Wakefield game, and has become quite entertaining. And as I've just mentioned, the game against Toronto was definitely entertaining. So I think, you know, before you get critical of Mr. Price, I think you should appreciate the fact that he's obviously listened to us, what we've said on the podcast, and and made some changes.
Well, fair enough. Okay. So in answer to the question, you don't know when we are going to peak?
No idea.
Okay. Okay, so Sam's stats this week cover not one, but two games. Let's hope he's put new batteries in his calculator and he's oiled his abacus. No, it's not double base, double negative, double cross, double dipping, double Dutch, or double me over. It's time for Sam's double statistics.
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes. It's Sam Sankey's statistics.
Oh, two games. Yeah, my calculator was going overboard. Steam was coming off it.
What do you have between your thighs?
No. we've covered quite a lot really, on the two individual games. So I wanted to pick out just a couple of individual performances, but then look at how we're using a part of our team. So individual performances, I've already said a couple of minutes ago.
Curry and Ratchford.
Ben Curry last week.
Oh, Jesus.
49 tackles in defeat. But I felt that where we lost the game, potentially, Wakefield just made 6 errors. We made 13. Wakefield gave away just 8 penalties. We gave away 10.
Just so on that statistic, Sam, what you're saying is that he made more tackles in defeat and then he didn't play as well against Toronto and we won. So actually monitoring his performance is almost like the opposite of the team.
Crisscross indeed. Yep. Now, last night's game, someone that we need to pick out is actually not a Warrington player, Sonny Bill Williams.
I love Sonny Bill.
9 offloads.
Yeah, none even went to his own players.
9 offloads, 22 tackles, 95 metres.
Those 9 offloads, how many went to his players? Because every offload I saw him make seemed to go to a Warrington player.
You've already said you were too busy having a shit to watch the game.
That's true.
And and Toronto did promote the ball a lot. So Sonny Bill must be about 46 now, and he is in the twilight of his career, but it was still clear why he has been a top, top player. But what I really want to come on to is our back three, or last week back two, Tom Lynham, Josh Charnley, and Matty Ashton, and the meters they're making. Last week, Tom Lynham, 113 meters, Josh Charnley, 106 meters, 14 and 15 carries respectively. Last night, Charnley, 159 meters, Ashton, 168, Lynham, 142, 20 carries, 12 carries, 14 carries. These guys, we talk about lacking a forward. These guys are doing the work of a forward, and that's something I'm going to be keeping an eye on.
Keep an eye on that, Sam.
Hey, interesting this now, isn't it? Because Matty Ashton obviously picked up an injury at the Toronto game now as well. don't know how bad it is.
Can I just point out I got a text from young Matthew Ashton? Nice one, mate. Can I just say that wasn't plural, wasn't mates. That was just sent to me, no one else.
Oh, right. Okay. Is he going to come on the podcast then?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? If you
he didn't respond. I wrote back. He didn't. Carry on.
Sam, we need to beef up Matty Ashton's stats. Get him on the podcast.
Yes. Well, I think the Super League have suddenly realised he is playing because they've not yet put his photograph up on the Super League website, but they have put his name up and his statistics. So we're getting there.
Well, okay. Now, based on Jason Clark's stats, it seems many Wire fans are unsure if we are getting value for money. So to find out exactly where we stand on this, what would Brian Bevan say has turned to the professionals by commissioning the experts to seek out the truth? We bring you Fake or Fortune.
Does it get off yet?
The overseas signings rugby league players market, a place of outrageous fortune.
$95, selling at $95 million.
But underneath the surface lurks danger.
Probably turned out about 200 fakes over a 6-7 year period.
They're completing fraud on a grand scale. I'm Fiona Bruce, and follow me on a journey as I discover the truth behind these signings. Helped along the way by my colleague, Fletcher Treat, and his contacts, I will uncover the truth. Do all overseas signings come with substantial provenance? As we prize open their frames to discover if Super League clubs are being framed. This program, I'm on the case of the Warrington Wolves player Jason Clark. My investigation will lead me to his birthplace, a skeptical upbringing, and finish with an Oscar-winning actor. My name's Fiona Bruce, and this week I ask the question, Jason Clark, fake or fortune?
Hello, I'm Fiona Bruce. My journey starts with a 24-hour first-class flight to Australia. After drinking Krug 1998 for the entire journey and dining on steak tartare at 36,000 feet over the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, I touch down a little worse for wear in Sydney. I check into a 5-star hotel, the Park Hyatt, taking a suite with an opera house facing view. A quick freshen up, and it's not long before I'm on the trail of the provenance of Jason Clark, as I catch up with the obstetrician, Dr. Bruce Bruce. Dr. Bruce Bruce, thanks for your time.
It's a pleasure, Miss Bruce, but please call me Bruce.
Dr. Bruce?
You don't need to call me Doctor.
Bruce Bruce?
Just Bruce.
Which one?
Bruce.
Christian or surname?
Either's okay.
And please, call me Fiona.
Fiona Bruce?
No, Fiona's fine.
Okay.
Bruce, is it correct you delivered Jason Clark here at the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital on the 28th of June 1989?
I did indeed, Fiona. He wasn't one of a get. Surprisingly, he popped out of the blind side. Tiny little resilient thing he was. Most midwives would have dropped him. But thankfully, Matron Bruce was on duty. Matron Bruce had a safe pair of hands.
Thank you, Bruce.
Please, call me Doctor.
So it turns out the provenance of Jason Clark checks out. But what about his substance? If we peel back the layers, is there a history of rugby league? I make my way to Jason Clark's first training ground at Redfern Park to meet with his under-8s coach, Bruce Tackle. Mr. Tackle, thanks for chatting to me about Jason.
Yeah, mate, please call me Bruce. And who are you, love?
Fiona Bruce.
No, I'm Bruce Tackle.
Yes, I know. I'm Fiona Bruce. Bruce, could he tackle back then?
Like I said, just call me Bruce.
No, Bruce. I was referring to Jason's tackle.
It's Bruce Tackle.
Yes, Bruce. What about Jason?
Who's Jason?
Jason Clark?
Don't remember him. I coached a Jason Bruce once, and a Bruce Clark. Oh, and a Clark Bruce.
It was clear with Bruce Tackle, I was never going to get to the tackle of the question of Jason Clark. 60 years of drinking fucking putrid fizzy Australian beer, so cold it could freeze the balls off a brass monkey, had taken its toll. I make a note in my file of facts. Provenance, tick. History, maybe. With the jury still out, there was only one man left to turn to, the South Sydney Rabbitohs owner, Russell Crowe. Could Russell confirm Jason Clark to be fake or fortune? I quickly trunk call my old good friend Fletcher Treat. Fletcher fitted Russell Crowe's suit the night he won the Oscar for Beautiful Mind, and it isn't too long before my beautiful friend Fletcher has prized open the rights to Russell's passage. As he arranges for Mr. Crowe to take dinner with me at the famous seafood restaurant, Bruce's Crab Sticks, overlooking Sydney Harbour Bridge. Russell turns out to be fabulous company, and the night flies by. We discuss topics such as his cameo appearance on Neighbours when he looked like a complete nonce in a pair of shit Aussie fashion jeans, and had he ever heard of Spunky the Dog Wanker, and did Phil Ford really steal Bob Eccles' car? But as the night draws to a close, I wipe the remains of Russell's coupe chantilly from my chin he so willingly shared in spades, and I ask him about Jason Clark.
In a change of best. Now, Fiona, why don't you and I go to my penthouse apartment and have coffee there? My chauffeur Bruce is waiting outside.
The next morning, I leave Russell's apartment, still wearing the Alexander McQueen silk taffeta evening dress I'd worn to dinner. I flag down a taxi, and a nice young driver named Bruce takes me back to the Park Hyatt. And as I pack my Maxwell Scott leather attaché case to leave for Blighty, I'm feeling confused. Had I really solved the mystery of Jason Clark, fake or fortune? And would Russell ring me? Or did I just become one more of his gladiatorial players group? I'm Fiona Bruce. Next week I ask the question. Anthony Gelling, fake or fucking useless?
That was good stats, that, Sam. Yeah, it was.
Well, I've just played
our best ever soundbite. And you've come back with that's good stats, Sam.
Sorry, I forgot we were on. No, it was. I think it was very good stats. And then anything to deflect from that fake fortune shant.
Right. Well, for the listeners, we've got. Sorry, Sam. Do you want to comment on it? Do you want to give? No.
Yeah, I just want to say you've ruined her for me now.
Oh dear.
Right. Well, for the listeners we have left after that, it's on to the Twitter vote. On current form, what number 1, 6, and 7 would you prefer to turn out for Wire? We had 4 options: Ratchford, Austin, and Widdup; Ashton, Austin, and Widdup; Ashton, Ratchford, and Widdup; and Thulis, Patton, and Dean. A clear winner, and probably it's been cemented now in place that this is the way we need to carry on. Ashton, Austin, and Widdup got 58%, Sam. And we don't know now, do we? Because he's been injured, obviously, and he might now be out for God knows how many weeks. But surely after last night's performance, he would have kept his spot, wouldn't he?
Well, that's not just last night, is it? That's 3 performances in a row that he has not looked out of place at all in a team that hopes to be challenging for the Super League title. So it's sheer pace. It's just excitement when he gets the ball and he's making things happen and he's not making any errors.
He hasn't dropped one ball yet, has he? He's not dropped one ball. He seems to have this, he's so elusive. He just suddenly this explosion of pace and he's gone.
Do you agree with this particular winning sort of combination, Rob? Or would you not prefer option C, Ashton, Ratchford and Widdup?
Well, that is the point, isn't it, really? We've got Daniel doing us a soundbite next week on Blake Austin, so watch this space.
Mm.
But it is getting to that point almost, isn't it, where, I mean, we haven't got a decent centre. I mean, I don't think Gelling was really the perfect centre, but if we had 2 good centres, then I think at the moment you'd have to make room for Ratchford in the halves and Austin would have to drop out. It won't happen because they're paying him an absolute fortune.
And I think that's the problem, isn't it? Is that, you know, you're playing him on reputation and like, you know, salary rather than actually the performances, because, you know, it doesn't do any harm dropping someone for a week if they're not playing very well.
What's happened to him, Sam? I mean, I know we've spoke about he draws players in possibly and then he gives more room on the outside, but it's not where he was. He took the piss at Hull last year. What's gone wrong?
He did, didn't he? And again, I don't think he's been the same player since he got injured. And I don't know whether it's he's not been the same player or just defences have cottoned on to the fact that he's not going to pass the ball that much and are just closing him down that way.
I almost question, and maybe I'm talking, this is a bizarre thing to say, but I almost think you could almost swap them round and put Ratchford in the halves and move Austin out into the centre.
Just about to say, didn't he play a few games at centre for Canberra? It's almost like they're interchangeable, isn't it? Austin and Ratchford in some ways.
Ooh, yin and yang.
Yeah, both big guys. Both
salt and pepper.
Yeah, salt and pepper. Yes, that's what they shall now be called, salt and pepper.
Look at that, that's put a smile on his face. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Oh, dear. Right, well, let's move on to social media. We've had that many come in last night. I don't know really where to start. I'll run through a few that we had the previous week against Wakefield. Paul Harper on Luther Burrell. I thought he did well against Saints. Some big tackles in defence. He's getting better. So hope he just gets more opportunities. Kind of going against what you're saying, Dennis, that he thinks he's improving. Wazza, disappointed with the Quality Street stat. He's not a fan. I know, he's not a fan of them, but he agrees on the Hill debate. Philbin needs to start. It's time to start phasing Hilly out.
That's
Sam,
good.
Are we keen to get Hill back in that starting line? I mean, we've certainly missed a bit of grunt with him not being there.
I'm glad he's going to be back. Whether you start him at prop or put him on the bench with Hill, Cooper and Philbin as the 3 main props, we look a better team than just 2 out of the 3.
And I think if they even that minutes out, like we've talked about, I mean, I'm not suggesting that we don't want Hill back, but I think if he's given equal minutes with Philbin, then I think that works well.
Ryan Nicko, first 10 to 15 minutes, this is against Toronto, we were far too good for them. And you could see it in this, but I haven't seen us put a side to the sword for a long, long time. Stepped off and dropped off. We were appalling. Toronto were the better side for the bulk of the game. I wouldn't go that far, but it was certainly we're not putting sides away, Sam.
Yeah, I certainly agree with the gist of what he's saying. In the second half, or maybe in the last 10 minutes of the first half, we dropped off.
Matty Ashton, nice one. Oh, I've read that one. Third mate, we were lucky tonight. The Toronto try that was disallowed at 20 to all would have changed the game. I'm not impressed our defence one bit. You happy with the defence, Dennis?
In patches, yeah. I mean, there was a couple of times where, like Sam mentioned before, if there was a video ref at the game, they may have scored a try, but there was about three occasions where they were over the line and almost did it. Fortunately, the referee and the one behind the touch and go was almost on the spot for that one.
Momentum's come back. Steve Warburton thought those two quick pens took the momentum away from them and it steadied the ship a bit. So he's in agreement with you, Sam, that the two penalties needed to be taken. Adam John Berry, what a player. I think he's referring to Ashton. He's turning out to be. Just a shame he went off injured.
Mm.
We've had a few of those, haven't we? We'd up getting injured before the start of the year and then, you know, this one happening again. Yeah, not good.
Got one off Dave Birch.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see us winning another game this season. Oh. Or for that matter, next year.
Oh, Dave.
When we drop into the Championship. Clearly, we are 3 years away from liquidation.
Oh.
Unless a sinkhole doesn't swallow up the Halliwell Jones first.
Oh, Dave. Eh?
That was from last week, I presume.
Come on, Dave. Pick it up. We'll see what Dave comes with next week. Baz on deck. Glad we made it, but more questions than answers tonight. I like that one, Baz. That's a good one, isn't it? Sums it up quite well, that, doesn't it? Glad we made it, but more questions than answers tonight. That's good.
That's a bit like The Prisoner. I always remember that one in The Prisoner. Questions are a burden to others. Answers a prison for oneself.
See, this is why we have you on. This is why you have you on, Dennis. Brilliant. Ryan Dillon, just the two words. Fuck me. That's all he wrote. Don't know what that was about.
No, thank you. Is that an offer?
What else have we had? Look, there's just dozens and dozens that have come in. Also, we should also point out Darren Jones has tweeted from Perth, Australia. He sent us a brand new lovely picture of Mrs. Jones on the beach. We've added it to the What Bevan Mrs. Jones album. Keep them coming in there, Darren. We really appreciate it. Phil Kinsella, saw him do this last year at Swinton. The lad can really finish.
What does that mean?
Well, exactly. Where can you go? Okay, all right. Well, we're going to move on to letter of the week now. Now, this one comes with a bit of a warning. I have to say, he's a little bit foul-mouthed. He's a little bit derogatory towards women. But in the substance of this, there is a love story. Okay? So now, it's a transatlantic email. Okay? it's you all right there, Dennis?
Yeah. Does this mean it's North American?
Well, yes. A little bit further down.
I've just heard that Ottawa might be coming into the league.
Well, you might need a tissue for this one. But it takes a bit of time to get going. It's not as good as Fake and Fortune, but it's a good one. Hey Bevan, my name's Ray Joblansky, and I live in Williamsburg, north side of Brooklyn, New York. I owned Minsky's Pastrami Bar on the corner of Haywood and Broadway until my bitch of an ex-wife took it from me. I grew up in New York because my Czechoslovakian grandfather sensed the Nazi uprising and boarded a boat to New York in 1921, and by working extremely hard, built up a dry cleaning business empire. Ironically, had he known his grandson would be taken to the cleaners by that whore, he'd have no doubt chanced his arm with the fascists and Ruskies.
Know how he feels.
There's definitely some deep-seated issues here.
I haven't picked up on that at all yet, Sam, to be fair. But you've obviously read something that I've not. Anyway, a friend of mine watches the New York Knights rugby team down on Hudson River, as it's impossible to get tickets for the Knicks. My buddy, being sports mad, he told me to give you soft cocks a go. I had to say, you turkeys have had me in stitches. I like the podcast, but I struggle with a lot of your references. Are you jerks stuck in the 80s, or is that the way life is over there? By the way, I met my ex-wife in the late 80s too. Had I known what a money-grabbing slut she'd turn out to be, I'd have crossed the sidewalk. Anyway, if you're ever downtown NY State, Dennis, look me up. Seems you've got a bit more scum in your dick than the gooner that does the stats on the show. He sounds a bit like my ex-wife's lawyer, a spineless fuck in a suit that has bled me dry of alimony. So
he's very intuitive, this guy.
He is.
This week's episode is definitely an 18, isn't it?
Ray continues. Here we go. I doubt I'll be in Warrington soon as that gold-digging bitch takes everything. But as if by fate, my father, God rest his soul, was stationed in Burton Wood, Warrington during the war with the US 12th Air Force and flew B-25 Mitchells out of there. If he'd foreseen his son would have been without a dime because his deceitful ex-wife-in-law would strip him naked, he'd have never taken off from the runway in Warrington that night he flattened Dresden. So to conclude, my rugby league team is the Wolves. If anything, just to honour my late dad's fondness of the town and what a girl called Mary from Orford, Warrington did to my dad for a pair of American tan tights and 2 ounces of licorice. The night he took her dancing. To this day, I can still see my dad smile when he'd think about Mary, or as he called her, the Par Hall English Licorice Rose. He concludes by saying, and for the record, my hag of an ex-wife should cut me some slack. It was only twice and it was with the same waitress. Oh, come on. You'd have done the same. The pretty broad was 25 years younger than me and had an ass tighter than a fat man's trousers after a long business lunch. Catch you later, Ray Joblansky.
Right. Okay. Super fan.
Good on you, Ray. I would send him a check, put him pen, but seeing he's broke, I think he'd probably use it for game means, wouldn't he?
Okay. What was the true meaning of the story then? Obviously, because it's quite controversial, that letter, isn't it?
Well, I think it was just a remake of Yanks, wasn't it? I think that's all. Due to numerous complaints and realizing it's quite clear Dennis isn't the next Elon Musk, we've banned tackle bags from ever approaching the subject of technology again. What on earth that leaves us with is anyone's guess. So with great trepidation, it's time for Dennis's Techloness Tackle Bags.
Tackle Bags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
Well, it was 2 weeks ago, if you remember, we discussed the appearance between the codes and the games down under compared to the rugby league game played in the UK, identifying the TV equipment and broadcasting methods, highlighting that those could be manipulated to make the game more attractive to the viewer. And if you remember, we pointed out a couple of the points, which were goal kicking in rugby union and the perspective and the NRL speed as we watch it as well. So do you remember that, guys?
Yes, still with me?
Dennis. Yeah. We remember that.
It's like one of those classes, Sam. You know, when the teacher, you don't particularly like them, and you just have to occasionally sort of auto go and pilot and go, "Oh yeah, sir."
And as a teacher, I have to keep making sure that you're still awake. So the question was whether myself or Mr. Moran go into partnership with Super League with an accelerator chip housed in a USB to plug into a smart TV to speed up the intensity of the game. The mailbox was moderately full. There was mainly full of complaints about Sam's stats.
Good.
Give it time, then.
Anyway, in agreement, Mad Dave, 22 part of the 22% agreed. Sam's amazing. Would it work on channel 913 to speed it up? I had a look at that. That was Babes and Brazzers. if you're looking at that. Against the idea, 80% was against the idea, so they didn't really like it. Kevin Lund says, it wouldn't work on my Ferguson Colour Star 3703. It hasn't got an aerial socket. It's only got an aerial socket. So you got to remember, some people out there haven't really got smart TVs, have they? I bet you have south of the river, though, haven't you?
Three.
Anyway, other This was, I can't remember the other. I think I've got my percentages wrong. I'm at 102%. Sorry about this. Anyway, Joe came in with, does USB stand for utter shit bollocks? Well, I'm not having any of that on my new tackle bags. That's terrible, Joe. Utter no disgusting. Need for language like that. It's disgusting. Anyway, this week, with my recent gagging order on discussing anything to do with technology, I've decided to turn my attention to psychology. Yeah. Now, this is an area I've studied. I use on a regular basis in terms of my managing of the players group in a business sense. I didn't get where I am today by not recognising the players group when I see one. That's what I say. And it's an area that I've often been accused of having maybe a borderline tendency for being a psychopath. A pervert. Or just a plain ineptitude or futility. I'm not a pervert. How dare you? How dare you? Anyway, which you're ruining me tackle bags here.
Sorry.
Right. But whichever way you look at it, the application of psychological principles being applied within our game, I'm hoping to suggest improvements for players, coaching staff, media, leadership figures within the rugby league arena. So this is what my topic is going to be on Tackle Bags now for the rest of the season. So strap in, boys.
You know, you get that bloke on the tee at golf and he has about 400 practice swings. You know, and then he moves away from the ball, Sam, and has a look down the fairway. This is what it's like leading into Dennis's question, isn't it?
He's not even started yet.
No, he's still wobbling over the ball. Oh, I'll hit it in a second.
I'm glad I'm bringing you along for the journey. Well done. Anyway, this week we're looking at the players group coop. Right? I'm going to look at the idea of attachment theory. This is one of the psychological principles. According to the development psychologist John Bowlby, the young develop selective attachment when they're about 6 months old. Before this period, they will mostly appreciate the security and comfort of an attachment figure. Now, when we bring new players over and we sign new players, one of the most important things I think we must do is obviously make them feel comfortable and try and look after them so that they gel quickly and we don't have to keep giving them 10 games and 20 games for them to fit in and so on. So this is a way of avoiding that unemotional detachment. And let's look back in history where this has happened. Tyrone Roberts didn't last long, did he? Didn't settle. He was back, mostly to do with a heater. Kevin Walters, was he another one who didn't last long? Had to go home. I've also put Craig Teitzel down here, basically, because he only lasted about 11 minutes before he got knocked out, and then he fucked off as well. But anyway, the attachment theory can manifest itself in ways of, like, you know, whether, you know, a player protests or gets in a bit of despair and emotional numbness. So to avoid this solution and address the attachment theory based on new players coming into the club, I'd like to build a small commune. Now, this commune would be for the players group coop. So this is where you would house around about six houses or apartment complex where players new to the club come in, and they're all situated within a small little commune. And in that commune, you could have a little gym, a playground for the kids.
Shag each other's wives.
No, we're not going there. Media room used to call home, a hairdresser. We all know a well-known
player. Is this Brookside?
A dentist. I mean, obviously, another player there, you know, after we sell Philbin with his things. We could have a food provision. Benny Westwood could park his van there in the corner as well. I was thinking maybe Steve Price could move there and he could give stimulating speeches to the people.
Could he be in, like, the manor, like, to the manor born? Could he be, like, just up the road on the hill?
Yeah.
Who's going to be David Koresh? It sounds a bit more Waco to me. Well, this, it sounds like it could all end in tears.
Well, no, it wouldn't end in tears. We'd have Lee Breers there. He could be there to encourage better kicking techniques. So, you know, we've got it all covered in this little commune. Bring the players in, settle them down, have all the amenities there, and what address
could possibly
this.
Go wrong?
Exactly. And address the attachment theory. Make them feel welcome. So if you think this is a good idea, again, Mr. Moran could pay for this along, and I'll run it as a little manage the whole thing. If you think it's a good idea, write into us at Brian Bevan on Facebook, What Bevan on Twitter, Hashtag WhatBevin on Instagram. I don't know if you can write to us on that. But email us anyway on whatbevin at gmail.com.
Don't forget the TV channel.
And Madden Boy TV, obviously.
Oh, well said, Dennis. Well said.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, boys.
Okay, the mystery behind Stonehenge construction may never be solved. The contemporary sculpture of Anthony Gormley's The Angel of the North may never be more admired, and the Whispering Gallery at St. Paul, designed by Sir Christopher Wren, may never be matched. But is there anything to be impressed by when visiting a Super League ground? So here to structurally critique, no, it's not Kevin McLeod from Grand Designs, but Watt Bevan's very own in-house architect, Daniel from You've Got a Loose Wire.
What I would do to take away this fear of being loved.
Now, I've been to 10 of the current 12 Super League grounds. The only two I've not been to are the two furthest away, Catalans and Toronto. So I can look at all the domestic ones. And we'll start with St. Helens, the champions. And I think the Totally Wicked Stadium is an excellent stadium. It's very good to look at. There's plenty of options with seating and standing. And I think the away end is great. Obviously, the famous night in 2018 when Lynham crossed to send us to the grand final. Fantastic scenes in that end. I think it's a very modern ground. It's a very good-looking ground. So just like the Halliwell Jones, really, I think it's up there as the best ground in the league, probably with the HA. I'm going to move on to Headingley now, which is a good one for me because it's very, very close to me. So it's probably the closest trip in sport, really, any kind of sport for me. It's one of those. It's a funny ground, is Headingley, because three out of four stands are fantastic. But the one that isn't is obviously the away end, which is completely uncovered. We've got Leeds away in a few weeks' time, and if it's wet, it'll be deeply unpleasant for any Wire fans travelling. But it is a great ground in terms of its facilities. The only thing that lets it down is the lack of parking at the ground, but living so close as I do, that's not too much of a problem. I'm going to talk about Salford now. I really like the AJ Bell Stadium. I think, if I'm honest, I think it's probably the most aesthetically pleasing ground in the league. I think it's very nicely designed. I think the red and blue seats work really well, and I think the shape of it is really good as well. For the home fans, you can actually see the whole of the motorway above where the away end is, which is very good. The only thing I would say is that because it's never full, you never really get much of an atmosphere there. I would also like if the away fans were behind one of the goals, which is what they used to be a few years ago. If you remember, for the Chris Sandow drop goal in 2016, the Wire fans were behind that end. It's a shame that that's not the case anymore, because I do think that creates a better atmosphere when away fans are behind a try line or a goal area. Going to talk about Castleford now, which again is one that's pretty close to me. I think Castleford is a very old-fashioned ground, just like Wakefield, but somehow it seems to have a bit more romance, a bit more character about it, and I don't know, I find it hard to criticise Castleford as much as I do Wakefield. There's something a bit more special about Castleford. It's hard to put my finger on it. A bit like Leeds, though, in the sense that if it is wet, you are going to get soaked in the away end, but there's always a good atmosphere at Cast, particularly on a night game. I remember last year there was a great atmosphere on the Friday night in May, I think it was, when we won there. Moving on then to Hull KR. Again, it's a rarity, is Hull KR, in the sense that the away fans are seated. There aren't too many of those in Super League, but it's not the worst ground in the world, KR, but you are a bit far away from the pitch. Thinking now about their rivals, Hull FC. I've grouped Hull FC, Huddersfield and Wigan together because they're all football stadiums. I've been to all three of those for football and rugby. And they're designed for football in terms of their size. And I think because they're not ever full for the rugby league, you don't get the atmosphere at any of those three. In terms of aesthetics, I think Hull and Huddersfield are very good grounds to look at aesthetically. Wigan, not so much, particularly as it's never full for football or rugby, really, apart from the Wigan Saints games. And then, of course, finally, Wakefield. I just feel you never feel particularly safe at Wakefield. It's falling down. There's a story of the gantry falling down when Eddie and Steve were commentating that time. You can't get a great view in the away end because there's not enough height on the steps. But that's my thoughts on the 10 Super League grounds that I've been to. So I hope you enjoyed it.
Have you got a favourite ground, boys? Daniel seems very keen on Salford, which I thought was a little bit bizarre. Sam.
It seemed very strange that I do sort of agree with him about Castleford. On a sunny day, it's nice to go back into the old-fashioned world of there. And I used to always enjoy a drink at the early bath when that was still open. And Huddersfield, when that's full, great atmosphere there. But
when is that full?
usually an international match against the Aussies.
Okay. And in reference to the Castleford one, you said when it's a sunny day, which doesn't ever happen in Castleford, and the pub's shut now.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Rob? Do you remember, what's your favourite?
My favourite was probably Watersheddings, Oldham, highest ground in the country. My mum took me to a game at Watersheddings and there was no ladies' toilet.
I reckon that
pissed her pants.
On Watersheddings, you could probably grow grapes on it because it was about a slope of about 17 degrees. Remember that from last year?
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Okay, it's on to Leeds, an away fixture on Friday night. Sam, do we go there as favourites?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Probably no, actually. Probably no. Yeah, I think it'll be very even, Stephen. It's very much a fence-sitter for me this week.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, let's have a look at the predictions first before we move on to that game and see where we're going to go. After 4 weeks, we have Dennis out in front on 3 points, but close on his heels, we've got Daniel, myself and Sam all on 2. And Callum got off the mark with a point against Toronto. Okay, well, we'll start with you, Sam.
No, we won't start with Sam. I'm top of the leaderboard here. I'm the one who's predicting everything. I've got an off-group RL predictor thing that I'm top of, and he knows it because he's at the bottom somewhere, languishing down there. I'm predicting how this season's going. We're going to lose a few games at the beginning of the season, but it'll all come good. Don't you go to him first, me first. What do you want to know?
Well, I want to know if we're going to win at Headingley, Dennis. Are you going for a wire win?
Sam, you take this one for a minute.
I'm going to go yes. Chris Hill will come back.
Make the difference. And
make a bit of a difference.
Okay, fair enough. What do we think of Leeds, Sam? I mean, we've not really seen that much of them yet, really, have we? They've still got to play this weekend as we go to recording, so it's difficult to know.
Yeah, the first game of the season that was televised against Hull, they looked awful. They looked way off the pace. And then last week they ran in a hatful of tries.
But who did they beat last week to run in those hatful of tries?
Oh yeah, it was Hull KR, wasn't it?
And Hull KR have lost last night.
Again, last night.
So
difficult to know. I think Leeds are old and slow, but I think over the course of the year I can't see them any better than seventh, but. They're at home. They're always a bit of a different. Anyway, we're going to win.
Curse with Leeds. They're playing sides that aren't playing particularly well. A bit like us last year, see? Mm-hmm. And then they'll get to the other end of the season. They'll be absolutely knackered, like you say. Too old.
So what are you going for, Dennis? You're going for a wire win, are you?
Yes. No. Mm-hmm. I am. I'm going for a wire win. Doesn't feel right. I mean, at least, you know, if I did decide to go the game, I could get a Timothy Taylor's quite locally in the Skyrack or something out of the Oak, if they serve it there.
It's true. Callum has gone for a wire win, so good luck with that, lads. And Daniel has gone for a wire loss. So it's left to me, isn't it? I think maybe Chris Hill will make the difference. I'm going to have faith in Steve Price saying that Blake Austin and Widdop... The more they play together, the better they're going to be. Disappointing that we've lost Ashton, but I think we can just about claw our way through it. So I'll go for a Warrington win as well. I think that's the way we'll see it. Okay, that's it for this week. Find us on Facebook under Brian Bevan. Tweet us at WhatBevan. Click and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, and you can leave us a review there too. Also, don't forget to send us your names for Sam's statistics. So far, we've received Shitistics and Twat Stats. So please keep those coming.
I don't like the second one there. I can go with the first one, but I don't like that second one.
So until next week, it's a swirling goodbye Toronto tornado from Sam.
All the best.
A dirty, wet weekend in Wakefield from Dennis.
Miss Vane, yeah.
And a sun-drenched, gay rainbow vista from me. I said vista. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
We didn't mention the winning Ben Murdoch's bobble. I was wondering whether we were going to set a little competition for it.
It's a bit late now. The music's playing.
Fuck's sake. I was wanting to win now. Sam can put it round his cock.
You've hardly got any air as it is.